It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I can't keep that up.
Okay.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that transmits at higher frequencies than humans can hear. It's a podcast for dogs, specifically. It's very popular amongst dogs. Anything you humans might be hearing right now is background noise. So, that's that. And I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 154.
Yes. And we're doing it in the daylight. It's kind of freaky.
It is weird.
Yes, because I am currently in the recovering stages of my injuries and so not going to work, I told William, I'm like, we can record it whenever the fuck you want. And so we're doing it on Wednesday afternoon rather than Thursday night. I won't release it until Thursday, but we're actually recording Wednesday afternoon. So it's all daylight outside. It's very weird.
And it's warm today, but actually tomorrow the weather's supposed to be kind of dodgy, so maybe it's a good thing we're doing this.
Yeah, it's still above freezing, though. This whole week is above freezing.
Well, that's what they're saying, but forecast keeps changing. A blizzard warning west
what?
Of us. Yeah, Ames and Des Moines.
I'm so over winter. Anyway, for those of you just joining us for the first time here, we have a hat. It's a magic. It has its own email address that it checks. That email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it again because it's important. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. It's important because, rumor has it, that mailbox is getting pretty slim. So we need you to write in so we can continue our lovely show. Because how it works is people, listeners, you folks, heroes, really, write emails to the hat. With questions, comments, topics, things like that. Sometimes people leave their name, sometimes they don't. It's not a big deal. And the hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the email written on them that manifest physically within the hat. We draw them out at random, read them on the air, and talk about them till we're bored. We do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. But once we run out of stuff, I don't know what we're going to do. So people need to write in. So write the hat with more stuff. What do you want us to talk about? Write the hat with that. That's what we'll talk about.
And something that we've noticed that we've been telling our listeners since the beginning is that if you want your name to be read on the air, and we don't know why you'd want that, but if you do, you're going to have to put it in the actual body of the email.
You're Mark. Mark's special.
If you send something in and you think that we'll be able to get your name from the address or whatever, well, we don't do that.
We don't see it. The hat sees it.
The hat does it. And
it only comes up if it's signed. If it's not signed, it's considered anonymous, even if your email was like, hey, it's obviously me, dot last name, dot first name at Yahoo. Doesn't matter.
The hat totally ignores that.
Yes. Which also means you can call yourself whatever you want. We have had, I suspect, pseudonyms on here before. Because some of these names don't seem real. I mean, Craig, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Anyway,
no, I'm kidding. But we have had some. So, yeah, so if, because here's the thing, and I get this. Some people might be concerned they're going to write in and I'm going to make fun of what they wrote in about. That's because I almost always do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to stop doing that and suck it. But if you don't put your name, that's fine.
Yeah.
Then nobody else will know. I mean, you'll still probably cry. I don't blame you. But nobody else will know your secret shame. So it's fine.
Whatever.
Don't worry about it. Just write, because otherwise we can't keep going. We're like PBS, but way less entertaining, way less educational, but also not asking for money. Just asking for some freaking emails. So do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, William, how was your week?
Oh, well, let's see. There was, well, you know, I had my birthday. That was
a good thing. Yeah. Did you make it to?
No.
No.
Did not make it home. Weather did not permit a trip 100 miles to the west to visit the farm. We probably will be going this weekend just to sort of make up for it, but,
you know. But it's GamaCon.
This coming weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, well. So, yeah. Just stayed home. Saturday stayed home.
Yeah.
Saturday was the 15th. Not my birthday. See, as I've often said on the show, my brother's birthday is on Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
And my birthday is 2 days later. I was born a year and 2 days after he was.
It would be cooler if your birthday was on Halloween, and then you would be like the Dresden kid.
But
that would be awesome.
But anyway, it used to, since we're so close together in age. In fact, I think I told you this. I was born, since I was born on the second full moon of the year in 1969. I was born just before the Chinese New Year. So my brother and I have the same Chinese zodiac sign, even though we were born a year apart. But anyway,
In China, you're the same age.
Well, same zodiac anyway. Same year, yeah, I guess you could say the same age. We've always celebrated our birthdays together, you know. His very first birthday, I was born 2 days later, so it's like both of us have always had our birthdays together. And he didn't like that, of course. I loved it because I'd worshipped the ground he walked on, but he was annoyed by it. And sometimes we'd celebrate our birthdays on the 15th. And so Saturday was the 15th, and that's when we were going to celebrate, but we weren't able to get together. But Sunday, the weather was a little bit better.
Your actual birthday.
Actual birthday, and we went to the Amana Colonies, which we like to do sometimes.
For some spetzel?
Well, we get chocolate over there, and there's a toy store over there that's got some really interesting stuff in it.
Spetzel.
No, we don't usually.
They make good spetzel.
Well, that's great, but I don't think we got it.
It's vegan, I think. Well, at least it's vegetarian.
I didn't get anything in particular over there, but a lot of times I just like to look anyway, because it's pretty cool. And let's see. You know, I haven't been doing very much else, except that the teenager in the house had a snow day the next day. So the other adult in the house took the day off, and so in a way I got to extend my birthday over.
We had that day
to Monday
anyway because it was President's Day, so we actually got that day off.
Oh yeah. The only, you know, thing I can talk about in terms of like media is we've been watching Bates Motel because it's on.
Oh
Netflix.
Yeah.
It's funny because we hadn't really known that there had been such a thing. And just by...
Yeah, nobody did because it didn't really do super well.
It's getting another season.
Oh, is it?
That's what I heard.
Wow.
But just by coincidence, remember I was telling you that we've been watching things like Rosemary's Baby and stuff at the house to sort of bring the teenager up to speed on some cultural stuff?
Yeah.
Like, what was the last thing we watched was Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
Well, Psycho was one of those things that we watched. Not more than a few weeks ago, and then we saw, oh look, there's this show.
It's like homeschooling. It's just really good.
And I'm glad we watched Psycho beforehand because then we can kind of understand what some of the references are. Because otherwise,
it would probably be weird if you went into that TV show not knowing.
I mean, we'd seen Psycho earlier and couldn't possibly have remembered all the little things. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know that I've ever seen Psycho,
But they pick up on a lot of little things from the film that you might have forgotten if you've seen it before a long time ago or hadn't seen it at all. So so it's cool to pick up on those things, and it's especially cool to see the young actor playing, you know, as a high school senior, Norman Bates, to see how he interprets that character.
Yes.
And I think it's great. I'm really impressed with it. The show itself is kind of uneven. The actors are good. I think the writing could be good. I think the producers or the directors or someone are kind of getting in the way because they can't figure out what they want the show to be.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
I just can't. I just have a palpable disinterest in the premise. Like when I heard about it, I was like, that is a picture perfect TV show I don't care about watching at all.
Well, I don't even know. If we hadn't just watched Psycho, and just thought, well, I wonder what they're going to do with this, we probably wouldn't have been interested in it.
Well, if you think it's kind of good, then I might be curious, but you aren't giving it a ringing endorsement, and so I probably won't add it to my list because
it's really hard to give it a ring because I know my interest in it is mostly kind of coming off of watching the film and being interested in what they're doing with it, being disappointed with a lot of things, but mostly being really impressed with the two main actors and appreciating their performance and the chemistry they have with one another. I mean, you might like it for those reasons too. I don't know. But I'm still not sure you'd appreciate it if you didn't watch Psycho beforehand.
Yeah.
Also, I put it in the blog of a couple shows ago. We were talking about Almost Human. Put out a little news piece about how, they have been releasing them out of order, just like we said.
And freakishly out of order.
Yeah. Well, yeah, more out of order than... Well, remember, I was saying that because of the overdubbing, you could kind of tell they were really out of order.
Well, I'm telling you, put on the captions, and it's a whole other world.
Yeah.
But, well, it does explain a lot of things, because at first I actually thought it was kind of intelligent on their part that they would have overarching plot points that they would touch on and then skip for a couple episodes and then touch on again. And I'm like, that's smart. So now I realize just because they did them fucking out of order.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But it's funny how you could tell. I mean, I thought it was interesting, the article, the person who submitted the article, they didn't seem to notice it. They just thought it was bad storytelling or something.
Yeah.
But I thought you could tell right in the second show. I mean, that's what we were talking about at the very beginning.
I didn't notice at the time. When you mentioned it, it suddenly opened my eyes. I was like, oh, yeah. And like I said, it explained the captioning situation.
Well, that's true. And also, I mean, even the last show that I've seen, I don't know if we're caught up.
I think I'm one behind.
But the overdubbing is, for me, maybe it isn't for average viewers, but for me, it's so distracting how often you're not looking at the person speaking, which, again, that happens in TV. You see the person's reaction while the other person's speaking. But they're doing it so much that I'm really surprised other people aren't as distracted by it as I am.
And it's still, I still don't like the show. I still don't think the show is good. But the show has solidly gotten past its inertia for me. Like, for the time being, unless something goes horribly wrong, I'll keep watching it.
Well, except I don't think it's going to get another season.
Yeah. That might be a problem. Dracula might be in that same
honestly, I think it deserves another shot. I really do.
Well, it needs... I mean, if you ever had any hope, it's the kind of show that needs another season to find its footing. There are shows that get going in the first season. This is not one of them. Like, this is definitely a ramp-up kind of thing.
But there's real good... I don't know if I'm going to say good. At least there's adequate... speculative fiction in it, which I said, I really like that, and I'll really lower my bar.
Fairly robust mythology.
Yeah. I'll really lower my bar to see that kind of thing.
There is a really good stable of acting talent.
Well, that's what I think.
That's the huge thing.
Yeah, I think that too.
These are people that can really run with it. Now, we don't have a hugely awesome stable of writing talent.
Well, no, writing's not the best. And obviously,
editing,
the producers who are... pushing it through aren't doing a very good job figuring all that out. But anyway, what about your week? I imagine it was eventful, even though you have been just here.
I don't know. Today has been a very good day.
Oh, good.
Today has been a good day. I'll tell you why.
Because I brought you a Diet Mountain Dew.
That is one of it. You brought me my caffeine. I made William buy me some Diet Mountain Dew on the way in because I don't have no caffeine in the house. And I can't drive, and I was lacking, so I have that as good. Also for lunch, I had corn dogs, because the producer bought me stuff, and the dollar store was having a sale on corn dogs.
Okay.
And she was worried, because our microwave doesn't work, and she's like, you can't use the oven without bending over, but I'm like, no, I can do this. Between my grabber and some food tongs, I got it working. So I had corn dogs today for lunch, and... this morning, had a shower. Had a real shower.
Mm.
Didn't have to stick any weird plastic wrap on my back.
Mm.
Didn't have to sponge bathe. It is finally 2 weeks today since I came out of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I can now actually get the side of the wound wet so I can have a shower again. I know I like showering in general. I'm a big fan of, you know, hot shower wakes me up. Very enjoyable, relaxing thing. Having to go without for so long, or having to take showers where, like, I have to be really careful not to get my back wet, you know, stuff like that. Oh, I missed it. In fact, I'm going to take another one today, just for the hell of it, just because I can. Oh, so nice. Still haven't figured out how long I'm going to be out.
Oh, you haven't?
I finally contacted them about it, but they weren't there. I left them a message yesterday, and I haven't heard squat. In general, this week has been some lesson learning for me that I am not as well off as I thought I was.
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, not that things are going bad, but I'm still having pain issues. I'm still taking the meds more than I expected to at this point.
Oh.
I'm trying to sort of wean myself off of them because they're pretty hardcore things that can be very habit-forming.
Yeah.
But I've still kind of needed them. And stuff like Monday, we had to go... we went to the hospital for an unrelated thing. And so it was a lot of walking around the hospital. And it... Not only did it wear out my legs, I wasn't hurting, but my legs just got really tired.
Mm.
And then the next day I was shot and actually had some good pain and stuff.
Oh.
And stuff like stairs are really hard right now. Not because they hurt, but my legs are just weak. And sometimes, like, I've had to take two tries at a step a couple times. Because my legs are just that weak right now.
Well, how did that happen?
I think it was expected. I mean, I think it was still all the messing with the nerves and everything. And I had some of that before. I mean, yeah, lots of weird shit is going on because they were doing surgery out of my spinal cord.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I mean, the big thing is I wasn't doing anything, and I'm just like, I feel okay, so I sort of assumed I was okay. And the producer also thinks I'm comparing to a normal level, where the last couple months, I've been really messed up the last couple months.
Yeah, right.
And so she's like, you know, I think you're comparing to, not to where you were before, but to where you think you were. But in general, I mean, I'm real lazy and real cautious. So in general, I'm always like, if I feel like I'm up for it, that's a good sign. But this is one of the first times where I'm like, I think I might actually be worse off than I think I am.
Now, didn't you say you were going to do some physical therapy? And
yes, that comes after my visit on St. Patrick's Day.
So you're not going to go back to work before then?
I don't know yet.
Oh.
I would like to. I'm still debating that with them. I think to start with, it's probably going to be just like a few hours to be safe. But I would like to. I don't want to spend another month in this house.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how I am. I'm getting tired of Skyrim.
Yeah, well.
I've been playing it for like a week.
Straight.
Sort of. but there's so much I haven't done. But I'm like, I spend so many hours of the day in there. I'm actually getting a little tired of it. So I don't know, yeah. I mean, it's weird because there's all the other stuff. I can't drive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, you know, I can't not wear the harness. I can't. So I'm a little bit, it's not just that I'm not at work. I'm sort of not anywhere.
Yeah.
I do get out some. We had gaming again. We mostly just kind of hung out. One of the players couldn't make it. And rather than do Southeast Missouri Volunteer SWAT, I actually stuck with our regular game because we're in a little stupid part right now. I just wanted to sort of get through. I think I mentioned this before. I found a cool pre-made sort of maze thing in one of the game books. And I'm like, this will be fun. This will actually fit with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it in there. And it doesn't. It's built for, you know, kids who are just like dice rolling and puzzle solving and stuff. When you're role playing, it just got bogged down with the repetition and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I just want to get us through it. And we got through it last night. So next time, the game will start sucking again because of things I made, not because of where I stole them from. So that's okay. But, so yeah, I guess I'm doing fine. It's getting a little boring and a little disappointing, but I found out that my mother listened to the last episode.
She did?
Yes, which is both pleasing and terrifying. The producer and I both sent a link to the last episode to all our family, because they had sort of heard things, but the last episode was a pretty comprehensive walkthrough of what happened. And so we were like, if you want the whole story, here's a good way to get it. And so,
along with everything else.
Yeah. Well, and that, yeah, my mom said she learned so much about chicken wings that she never knew before. So that was fun. But yeah, I'm really pleased she listened. At the same time, I'm like, oh my God. That's just fucked up that my mom would listen to this. But she said she liked it, so.
She did, huh?
Yeah.
She wasn't put off by your co-host.
She thinks, as most people do, that we play off each other really well.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
And I think I'm going to have Indian food tonight, so that's just a topper to the day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Did we see a movie? I don't think so. I've lost track of things. All right. So I guess hat time.
Yeah.
All right. Make sure they're mixed up good in there. They might not be well mixed up.
What do you mean?
I mean, sometimes the hat forgets to randomize.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Sometimes the hat manifests in a tight little pile of cards, is what I'm saying.
What you're saying is sometimes the hat will feed us, like, one submitter over and over and over again instead of a variety of
them. Yes, that does happen, especially when one submitter sends us 80,000 questions.
Well, that's one of the great things about writing into the Magical Talking Hat. You could have a whole show devoted just to you.
You can control this programming if you write in enough. It has been proven by both Azure Talent and Mark.
All right, and speaking of Azure Talent with three exclamation points. Dear dissonant and confused worst voices of the Magical Talking Hat.
Yeah, what?
What's something you know you do different than most people? Boy, that's a good question.
I know your answer.
Well, what's my answer?
Interact with other humans.
Well, now, come on. That's not really true.
Something I do different from most people. I feel like there's a ton of these, and I suddenly can't think of any.
Well, let me think. Well, there are a lot of idiosyncratic things, you know, that a person probably doesn't do like anyone else, just for the fact that they've not probably witnessed anyone or at least very many other people doing it.
So that often comes down to hygiene things, yeah. or sex things.
Such as the manner in which you take a shower you were talking
exactly.
about earlier.
Yes, yes.
It's probably different. You don't know yes. for sure, but it probably is because you're making that up
and,
completely without
as
any
other reference. I think I've discovered before, I have found that there tend to be two camps when it comes to wiping oneself after defecating. One that involves
sitting
and one that involves standing to do it. Mm. And generally speaking, people from one side are shocked to learn that others exist. I was shocked until there was a movie that actually had some guys in like one fun, and so they all started talking about it. And I was like, is this really a thing? And it is. So, yeah.
There's probably also things that aren't, well, there are things that you would have seen other people do, but you're going to do them in an idiosyncratic way because there's something very intimate about it otherwise, such as the way you eat, for example. I mean, you've been watching people eat your whole life, but
yes.
the way you eat is probably going to be unique based on the things you like to eat and how you like to eat them, regardless of how you ever see other people eat.
Interesting one that you bring up here because I actually eat very strangely in certain contexts. The general concept is this. While I can appreciate a mixture of flavors, and I often have, and especially if I'm eating a really nice meal, I attempt to eat it the way I think the chef wants me to eat it.
Hmm.
Outside of that, I have my whole life been fairly big on deconstruction of stuff, and I just want to taste the individual flavors.
Hmm.
And so I frequently deconstruct my food to do this. And the way that it most commonly manifests, and that really throws people for a loop, is pizza. The most common way I eat pizza, take a slice of pizza,
mm-hmm.
I pick the toppings off one by one and eat them. Sometimes, if it's feasible, when I was younger I did this, I will pick all of a certain topping off and eat it, and then pick all of a different one off and eat it sometimes. Then I will pick the cheese off and eat it. Then I will often, if there's enough sauce that there's still sort of sauce left, just sort of like lick it up with my finger, and then I will eat the crust.
That's interesting.
But I've also been known to do this with burgers sometimes, where I'll like eat layer by layer going down. A lot of things I do like this. I don't know where I got it from. It just sort of, I mean, nobody else in my family does it or anything. Mm-hmm. I have encountered some people who sort of eat like that, but it's not, I mean, I don't have any links to anything. And it's not the only way. If you watch me eat, if I eat four slices of pizza, 2 to 3 of them will be eaten that way. And 1 to 2 of them will be eaten just normal.
Normal.
Yeah. And pizza is where it manifests the most, but it's a general thing I do with a lot of my food.
And then there are those idiosyncrasies that come when you sort of deliberately don't want to do things the way other people do them, either because you think they're doing it wrong or because you just want to be different or any number of other things.
Yes.
For example, the way you might dress.
Yes.
But, let's see.
This reminds me of a story. It's a great story the producer has, but she's not here. She's never here on the podcast, so I'm going to tell it. The producer spent many summers in her, like, teen years as a camp counselor at a variety of different camps in the summers.
Mm-hmm. I seem to recall that. She did a lot of that.
This particular story involves working at a camp. There are two things you need to factor in here. One is she worked in the kitchen a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And two is also working in the kitchen a great deal was a gentleman from Africa who had his own little personal joke he liked to do. Is he would pick up the phone when it rang in the kitchen and say, "Chicken." And originally they were like, "Why are you doing it?" And they asked him, and he's like, "I think it's funny because it sounds similar, but it's not, and almost nobody notices." And so I just think it's hilarious to do that. And they all were like, "That's pretty funny." And so they all would start to do that. When they'd say, "Chicken." And one time, the producer answers the phone in the kitchen and says, "Chicken." And the other voice says, "What did you say?" And it's the boss of the camp. And so she explains that this is a joke because that's what Kiboko always said. And she got chewed out and said, "He is from a different country. This is not his first language. You should not make fun." And she's like, "No, he knows. It's not an accent thing. No, he knows what he's saying. He is making a joke." They got someone like, "No, that is rude. You should not make fun of Kiboko. He's a guest in our country."
That's a good story.
That is a fun one I run into in general, is somebody from a different culture, and when they are and are not joking. Well, I think I told you about my friend, my coworker and friend from Kenya, who's the one who told me about Nelson Mandela dying, and was asking me, he told me because he came to me and said this, and was asking if they would give him the next day off in observation of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was confused, and then I explained we don't really do that and stuff. Then I find out he's basically kidding, because you know, it's not from South Africa. And I mean, it's a big deal. It's Mandela.
Yeah.
But he mostly was like, "You think I could find a way to turn this into getting a day off?"
Jeez.
But at the time, my brain, because I'm an asshole, is like, "He's from Africa. Of course. That's what their people do. They spend a day in mourning when somebody from a different country dies."
It's funny how people don't realize, and you know, of course, it's not even really salient in my brain how huge Africa is as a continent. It's enormous. Yeah, yeah.
And it has many countries in it.
And whenever I hear anyone talk about it as one thing,
they almost constantly
do. Yeah. It kind of, it's it bothers me because it's like, that doesn't make any sense. But it's only just started to do that because for a long time, I, like everybody else over here and in our culture, you know, people talk about Africa like it's, you knew it was a continent with many countries, but it almost had this sense that it was like Europe where it's not very big. There's not that many countries, but it's enormous.
Well, but that's part of
and
the
problem.
There's
lots of countries in it. It's very diverse.
And the national money, it's a lot like Eastern Europe in the late 20th century is the lines that show you where countries are and the non-existent lines that show you where different cultures and tribes and mm-hmm. historical states are, no relation to each other
no,
whatsoever.
Right.
So it's a pain in the ass to be like, yes, it has many nations. It also has many different peoples. Those bear no resemblance
no,
to each other.
No, that's right. It's very complex and it's yeah. and interesting. And it, you know, when I was growing up, it was not portrayed that way at all.
No.
And, of course, going through college, you realized, oh, okay, it's a lot more complicated than I was taught. And then, but even after that, a few years later, realizing, oh, it's even more complex than that, and feeling like, why am I 30
and
years
it's
old?
Evolving.
Yeah.
So what it actually was when you were a kid and being told the wrong stuff and what it actually is now also
it's
bear
different.
No resemblance
and
to
so
each
you're
other.
Wondering, why am I 30 years old just learning this stuff? This is really sad.
And then,
but,
like,
you know,
Africa, the dark continent, which is problematic on a variety of levels,
right.
But also, tell me any other continent that gets its own thing like that. South America, the corn continent. No, you know. Antarctica, the ice continent. No, it doesn't come up.
No.
North America, the douchebag continent. I have no idea. The producer sent me a great video today. David Attenborough, you know,
Remember
the
sure,
Gentleman?
Sure,
famous
yeah.
narrator of many specials
yeah,
on nature and
nature,
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little 1.5-minute video narrating in that style Olympic curling.
Really?
Yes. It's quite good. I should put that link in the show notes.
So can you think of anything else you're pretty sure you do different from
I'm sure there are tons, but I have no idea what they are.
For people who get to know me, I'm generally considered, or at least I'm told this, that I'm kind of an idiosyncratic person, that there are
yes.
quite a few things I do differently than other people that I don't really notice that I'm doing different. Well, kind of like, a little bit like we were talking about Almost Human and how in the very second show I'm noticing little problems and little things thinking,
so you're saying
wrong
your
with
life's
this.
Episodes are out of order?
No, I'm saying that I think what's happening is obvious, and I'm talking to you about it on the podcast, and then I find out to other people it wasn't obvious at all because they're just not noticing these little things. So I must watch television very much differently
well,
than other people do.
And vice versa. There's a lot of probably. Things that you don't get that all the rest
yeah,
of us think are really obvious.
That's right. That's right. So
I've always assumed that you were born in some sort of Skinner box.
Well, I just
and
think...
eventually you were trained to have these memories of growing up on the farm with your... family in
no.
Melcher, Dallas, which, by the way, I can't find any record of anywhere.
Yes, you can. But most of the things that I do differently than other people, I'm not aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to sometimes a listener and a member of our cast for Briar Rose, Erin. She's playing Lady Redcap. I was talking to her just the last couple days, and I was telling her about how when I worked, the last place, I don't know if I ever told you any of this, the last place we worked, on my annual reviews, I would, you know how when you get your annual review, they often find something to be critical of just to make it, mostly to make it look like they're paying some attention to what you do.
Yes. So they wouldn't be like, you're perfect. Get out.
Or average or whatever. I mean, they have to say yeah. something really good and they have to say something really bad. But the consistent criticism of me was, I used too many big words when I communicated with people. And
I can believe that.
And they didn't understand me. Which, and this came up year after year after year, in spite of any effort I might make to not do that, even though I could never figure out how not to do that. Because from what I heard was, I mean, how can I explain what I heard? I didn't understand this because I don't, first of all, I don't think of myself as having an extensive vocabulary. At all. I mean, you know, in standardized tests, I do okay in vocabulary, but I'm constantly hearing words from people that I don't know or reading words I don't know and having to look it up.
The Purdue and I just recently figured out that we were both grossly misinformed as to what unctuous meant.
Unctuous?
Yes.
Well, I mean, is it related to unction, and is it related to, like, ceremonies where you anoint somebody?
I don't, like, related to unguent?
No.
No. No, I don't think so. I heard that word before. I hear unctuous a lot,
no.
And I knew it was like a negative thing. In my mind, it was something akin to like impudent, sort of an upstart sort of thing.
Oh.
No, it's actually more greasy and subservient. When she described the definition, obsequious seemed like a good synonym for it. But it actually is also, it's more directly a term involving food that often involves greasy and
Well,
fatty
because
and that kind
I
of
think,
thing.
I think an... unction, or that term is used for rituals where you anoint someone with oil.
Okay.
Or that might be the connection there, but anyway. But
well, but here's the thing. There's a lot of people don't know what unctuous is. Not all people, let alone a couple, would care enough that we would look it up. And it wasn't like somebody was using it and we felt stupid. Like, we came across it someplace random and did that. A lot of people don't care about their vocabulary. I'm not even going to say don't have it. They don't care. And it messes you up. Because, yeah, and it doesn't show up on standardized tests. I didn't do amazingly well on the vocab sections of standardized tests. But there's a lot of people who can study and who can know the word for a test and then never use it again.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing is, so, you know, my experience with this is that I didn't feel like I had a very large vocabulary. I felt like I was... When I saw a new word, I always was convinced I was the last person on the planet to be introduced to this word. So, the notion that, the implication by this criticism was that I was using big words on purpose, or, you know,
in
to,
a condescending manner.
Yeah, to make myself look smart or something, which was the farthest thing from the truth. I mean, if I used a word, I was certain that everybody knew it, or else I wouldn't have used it. And I didn't even know how to fix the problem because
a very difficult problem to fix.
I never knew when, well, unless you are being a jackass and you're just using words to impress people, you can stop.
If you're doing
but,
something intentionally, yes. But in general, if it's, you know, you need to gauge these people's level of vocabulary. Like, how do you do that other than actively studying how they speak for a long period of time?
Well, I just couldn't believe that I was using any. But here's another thing that's kind of related. Do you remember the personality test we took? In Applied System?
Is that the introvert?
Yeah.
I know of them. I don't remember having taken it at Applied, but...
Well, we took them, and I'm thinking I might have taken it 3 times, not just 2 times. But however many times I took it, I failed it.
How is that possible?
Well, they had this way, as you were pointing out, it divided people into, like, extrovert and introvert, and a few other things. But there were also questions on there, like, have you ever stolen from an employer and stuff like that? And so they had this sort of algorithm they applied to your answers where the answers were too contradictory, where it would look like you weren't being completely honest.
So they were like, sorry, William, you have no personality.
No, it was, sorry, William, this says you're a liar.
Well, you are a pretty big liar.
Well, the first one, they said, well, you know, sometimes this happens. You just need to take it again. Took it again, same thing. And I do think I probably took it 3 times. And every single time, and I'm going to tell you right now, I was honest on this test, at least as honest as I knew how to be. And, you know, a couple times they thought, well, maybe you're just overthinking the questions, which, of course, yeah, I would do that.
You could do that.
I would totally do that. So I tried not to do that. You know, I tried to just take it as literally as possible and try not to. But every single test came out the same way. And, you know... That's fine, but what bothered me was that rather than them thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm just a person that doesn't happen to fit into one of these little boxes. I mean, because the test could be, and not that I'm special, unique, or whatever, but no test is going to fit everybody. They just decided that I was a liar, which I thought was really kind of rude. And thankfully, you know, my immediate supervisors didn't think I was a liar, and so they just dismissed the test, which I was grateful for, but they didn't have to. I mean, they probably could have fired me saying, well, we took this test, gave him this test, and he proved to be a liar. But I mean, it was stuff like, because the thing is, if someone said, well, if you go to a party, I mean, this would be like one of the questions. You go to a party, and what do? You immediately interact with people. You stand in the corner and wait for people to interact with you. You show up, you look around. If you don't see anyone you know, you leave. You know, these are the selections. And of course, I always picked, well, I immediately go talk to people, because that's why I do at a party. But another question said, if given a choice, what would you do with an evening? And you could do whatever you want. Go to a party, stay at home and read a book, whatever. And I would almost always pick the stay at home option.
Yeah.
And so to them, this was a contradiction. How could you be someone who would, if given the choice, stay home, but when you are forced to go to a party, you're going to be all gregarious and talk to people? Well, that's just the truth of how I am.
That's just you. And that is just you. You're a freak, I'm telling you. I've said this for years. Here's the thing. I think you are probably very important to the whole of creation.
Come on, stop it.
No, I think that you are
some particular... Don't tease me. You're just making fun of me.
A particular random variable that you're there that sets off the chain reaction. And then if you didn't exist, everything would just be sort of the same. And then you're this little rock in the river that then makes this ripple. And then
no, you know, I think it's just that we live in a culture... Like, this test wanted to claim to be based on science and all kinds of other things, but at the end of the day, it was informed by certain cultural expectations.
Oh, absolutely.
That people, in general, can be put into this box or the other box, and that it just couldn't deal with someone who is introverted, which I am, but who acts, in some circumstances, extroverted, because... And I can't explain why I do that.
Well, and I think that I think the whole introvert extrovert thing is stupid. This actually came up when I was doing some of the game theory too. You can have introverted behavior, extroverted behavior. You can have introverted desires, extroverted desires.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff. But one person is not one or the
other. No, that's true. It's kind of a false dichotomy. On the other hand, believe me, if anybody could be defined as introverted, it's me. I mean, every time I look at any kind of definition of it, when I look at Jung's definition of it, when I look at anyone's updated definition of it, I fit it. And I'm glad I relate to it even.
Yeah.
And if they show an extroverted description, I don't. So, yes, I also think it's kind of a false dichotomy and people don't really fit into these categories, except I really kind of feel like I do. But
because you're a freak.
But when they talk about behaviors, like more explicit behaviors, yeah, like what you would do in a given situation, sometimes I fit and sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know why we should assume that just because a person has these certain personality traits and behaves a certain way in this situation, they're automatically going to act this way in a different situation.
Well, especially because that implies a single variable that determines your behavior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and
like, there could be all sorts of other reasons why you act sociable at a party. Even like you could be an introvert and hate the idea of doing that, but for some other weird shit, yeah, when you were raised, you feel you're forced to do that. Like, no, there's so many reasons.
That's exactly right. And what it comes down to for me is that the only difference. Our culture wants to constantly divide everything into two and only two pieces.
Yep.
Gender, introvert, extrovert, good and bad, conservative, liberal. I think there were some questions about that on the test, too, that I didn't conform to.
Felony and misdemeanor.
And I think what happens is people will deliver this test, and if 95% of the people don't fail it the way I did, to me that only proves how well people are conditioned to conform to one thing or the other, rather than that people actually do conform to one thing or the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so therefore you're going to have a few people who don't.
Well, and as much as we like to dress it up, in this day and age, still, if you're the exception, there's something wrong with you. That still absolutely exists. And it is purely coincidence that you are the exception, and there is absolutely something wrong with you.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, both of those things are true in your case, but that's pure coincidence. They shouldn't assume that.
Well, it was...
Come on, people, laugh. These are the jokes.
It was an interesting both of those things while I was working Applied that happened to me, I thought, gosh, this is really... Well, and it helped me realize, I mean, we've been talking about this lately too, about the whole status thing. In the last 5 years of my life, I've been realizing how often this has played a role in my life when I didn't know it. Mm. How often someone thought because of the words I used, I was being a show-off or trying to put them in their place when I wasn't doing that at all. And so they were treating me like I was being a jerk to them, and I didn't know why they were mad at me, but it was because they thought I was acting like I was better than them. You know, my mentor, Carl Couch, did I ever tell you this? One day I was talking to him, and it happened to come up, oh, well, I grew up...
I always think your mentor was named Barty Crouch.
Carl Couch. It came up that, well, you know, I grew up on a farm, and we were kind of poor. You know, we didn't have a lot of money in the drafty old farmhouse
I grew up in. And you had to sell the cow, and this man had beans.
And Carl was surprised by that. He expressed some, you know, genuine surprise. And I said, well, what are you surprised about? He said, well, I thought you came from a wealthy background, which was surprising to me because not only could I not think of anything I'd ever done to indicate that, but at that time I wore this flannel jacket that had been my grandfather's. He died in 1985, and he sort of left this to me, and I really liked it, you know, and I appreciated it, and I wore it so much that it was kind of ratty looking. I mean, I probably looked like some kind of bum walking around on the street.
No, but this was in the age where affluent, wealthy people spend a lot of money on clothes to look like that.
I don't know, but he thought
no,
I came
I'm
from
not
a wealthy
surprised.
Background.
I'm not surprised that he had that reaction. With you, because you don't fit into normal social connections, like, you're this way about something, and for most people, if they're this way about that, then they're that way about this, and you're not. Because of that, I think how people view you very much depends on the vector at which they approach you.
Well, see, I kind of...
So in certain ways, I can totally see somebody just assuming you came from a wealthy background. Approaching you from other ways, it would be quite obvious you came from a rural and fairly poor background. There's lots of...
Well, see, but what I wonder is if he thought that because he thought that I acted like I was all that, you know? Like someone who came from a poor background wouldn't act that way.
And certain aspects of critical thinking, certain aspects of mannerism, things like this, imply an education level that can be hard to get in the lower economic status.
Maybe. Here's another thing. That I don't know if I do this differently than everybody else, but I know it's gotten me into trouble, and it took me a long time to realize it was getting me in trouble, was the way I was raised. When you have, first of all, the way I was raised, everybody knows the difference between fact and opinion. You don't have to sit and explain it. If you're having an argument about opinions, you know that you're expressing your opinion, you know the other person is expressing their opinion, and you know it has nothing to do with empirical facts or anything like that. But nevertheless, what you do in that situation is you express your perspective in the strongest terms that you know how. Otherwise, what's the point in having an argument about it? And also, if you give your strongest argument and the other person refutes it and can, you know, tear it apart, well, then you can feel even more confident that, oh, that person's actually right and you're wrong, and you can now take a different perspective on things. So that's just how you did it. That's how you assumed everybody did it.
Yeah, no, that's super weird.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So I went into the world thinking, well, whenever you go into a situation, you argue, you know, you don't have to make sure you differentiate between what's in a fact and opinion, because everybody already knows that. That's so basic. And if you're talking about opinions, you can state your argument in the strongest possible way. And then if the other person does the same and you decide they're right, what you do at that point, of course, is say, oh, you know what? You're right. I'm wrong. And change your opinion, which I often did. But some people never thought it would get to that, because when I stated my opinion so strongly, they took that to mean you can't convince me.
You were quite brainwashed. Yes.
Yeah.
No, and that's weird.
Which is completely opposite. They could have convinced me. You could convince me of anything as long as you stated your argument strongly as well. And it was a better argument. But people just thought I was closed-minded because of how strongly I stated my argument, when that's just not how it was. But that's the environment I came from. You had these arguments, you had these debates, and sometimes the other person outdid you, and you in good humor and good sportsmanship, said, yeah, you're right, I'm wrong, and that was it. Or if you were right and they were wrong, then they admitted it, and you parted as friends. That's just how things went.
There's still, you still carry some of that. As somebody who has argued with you many times, I still can see that a lot. There are a lot of times where you come off as very fanatically attached to your argument because you are being very strongly stated. And at the same time, like, I know that's not your style. I mean, I know you're not actually like that.
No.
But in arguments, I can come across that way sometimes. You reminded me, there was a thing, I don't think it was the last gaming session, it was the one before. I try and do this, I try and be very big on this, because so few people, I feel, nowadays are, of acknowledging when you're wrong about something.
Okay.
We were gaming, and there was a piece of information that I asked for. Oh, I might as well do specifics here. Somebody shot their gun, and I'm like, what's the damage on your gun?
Mm.
And she says, I don't have it written down here. You never told us to.
Oh.
And I said, yes, I specifically did. When you guys got your equipment, we went through the fact that we were going to need the damage on all of these to go. And I was kind of a bitch about it because this kind of stuff has come up before, especially with this player. And so I was like, we absolutely did. I remember when we did. We all went through it together. And there's this pause. And somebody else said, I don't have them either. And somebody else was like, yeah, you said just write down the type now and you'd work it out on the fly. And I suddenly remembered that that's exactly what had happened. Now, I feel like a lot of people in that situation, very embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah.
And not only trying just sort of like, okay, whatever, sorry, we'll go on. But sometimes even lash out like, well, you should have done something, you know. And I was very embarrassed and very sort of upset with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of gritted my teeth and I was like, wow, I'm an asshole. I'm like, you guys are right. I totally got that wrong in my head. I am sorry. As you were. Like, I am 100% wrong here. That, yeah. And I was really embarrassed, but I was also a little bit proud of myself because I'm like, I'm owning it.
But it feels better, doesn't it?
Well, it was tense for a minute.
Yeah, sure.
And I've been on the other end of those conversations, and it can often get much more tense once that becomes obvious.
Yeah.
But I did that, and everybody kind of laughed, and I kind of laughed, and I felt embarrassed. And then we went on, and it was fine.
Yeah.
But no, I very much value that. That's one of my big ones, that one and the whole positive criticism is a big one, too. I find it, especially in the workplace, is people need their positive feedback equally to their negative.
Yeah, that's right.
And some people believe a little bit of that, but the concept that equal, that me telling you what you're doing right is equally as important as me telling you what you're doing wrong. Not a lot of people operate on that. And I don't know that I do either, but I try.
Well,
these are all ideals. I don't know that I can do that all the time. This was just a great example recently of how I fulfilled that ideal really well when I was a complete jackass and I owned it.
You know what it's like? You know how, I think it's generally understood that when people get together to compete in a sport, for example, that they're both going to put 100% in. And that, you know, that's the best thing for them personally. That shows the most honor to the person they're competing against. And then when one person wins and the other person loses, they're all gracious about it. And that was just the same approach I took to arguments. What's the difference? You come, you're in a competitive situation, you both bring your best game, and when one loses and the other wins, you're gracious about it. That's just how it was when I was growing
and
up.
On paper, I think 80 to 90% of people would agree with you that that's how they think it should be. A pretty big portion of those people would say that's how they believe they do it. And a very small percentage of people actually do that.
Well, you know why,
myself
though?
Included. I don't do that.
But it's a status thing, isn't it? I mean, the reason, it barely works in sports competition because there's always this sense that the person who wins is like cosmically on some existential level better than the other person. And that feels bad. But you don't have to think about it like that. I mean, it doesn't have to be thought of that way at all.
But also, it's much easier then because in a sports competition, unlike in a conversation, there are rules. and there are very clear, defined metrics for measuring who won.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not only, because there is that sense in there, but I can't deny it unless I'm so desperate as to say you cheated or had some other advantage.
Right. Well, but I think in a conversation,
it's all subjective. Nobody, there are no specific rules. There are some things, like if you and I are having a debate about economics, there's an unspoken rule that I don't punch you in the face. There's an unspoken rule that I don't cast spurious assumptions about your mother, you know, in this or whatever.
Right, right.
But there aren't really rules, and there's not a measure of who won, unless somebody concedes, and that happens so seldom.
Yeah.
Where somebody's like, you're right, I was wrong. And that seldom happens because people feel that it makes them, because they feel that same thing, that somehow winning the argument makes them better in the universe. And also just because it can be hard if somebody has an argument to refute that. I mean, it doesn't, it's not like I'm constantly walking around forming opinions that are just really easily toppled. Walking outside, I'm like, oh, elephants can fly. Actually, look at this website. Hey, you were right.
Well,
you
know? But also, people do really tie up their identities into some of their positions.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting. I mean,
I think everybody does that to a certain degree, with the possible exception of you. I know I do a lot. I think that's a huge thing of, say, I'm arguing against that condition. I'm not arguing against you as a person.
Yeah, right.
And that can be very hard to know consciously and to believe. And this goes back to our usual stuff we do with you in human training, which is the people frequently put their...
Human training.
Yes, put their emotions ahead of their rational thought. And they don't do it on purpose, and they don't necessarily want to do it. But it happens a lot.
But you know, one thing I do that I've always done, and it's like I said, it's gotten me in trouble, is when I'm talking to someone without really thinking about it, and I'm really actually figuring this out just now as I'm talking to you, I pretty much come to this person with the unspoken understanding, and I assume that they're doing the same thing, which is a stupid assumption, I realize, but I do assume it, is that we're both coming together under the assumption that at the end of the day, neither one of us really know what we're talking about. Whatever it is we believe that's not based on science, and even some of that stuff can be shaky because new research comes out all the time, you just don't know. So as we discuss and debate and maybe even take opposite sides of an argument, we're both learning this together. On a deeper level, no matter how combative we get in the course of our conversation, on a deeper level, we're in the exact same place. We're both equally ignorant about what's really going on, and we're just trying to figure that out. And so I always remember that. And so there's no point where I feel like it's personal, I guess.
Yes. And I think the vast majority of people would tell you that's a healthy stance to take. Slightly smaller majority of that would say that's the stance they're taking. Very few people are actually doing that. Most people, whether they're conscious of it or not, including me, on shit that really doesn't matter, come to the conversation thinking one of us is going to win, and on the assumption that you're trying to win as well as I am. And it's not on purpose, and if I ever like am made aware of that in the moment, I'm like, dude, knock it off, because that's not what I'm going for. I want what you're talking about. I don't think I do it
well for me
inherently, at least.
I don't think I ever come into a conversation wanting to win, but I do, just like everybody else. There is something that happens to me, and this happens to everybody, is sometimes I have some hang-up I'm not really aware of. And so while I'm having a conversation with someone, you for example, I'll notice that I'm getting more emotional about it than I normally would.
Yeah.
And that is the first sign to me that there's something else going on here besides just this conversation.
Well, that triggers introspection in you.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes in me, not very often. And a lot of people, it doesn't. They run with that. And it happens with me, too. The emotion, the presence of the emotion takes the place of any introspection. And so then it spirals out.
I think that happens to me too. Sometimes I need, like you've often said, sometimes I need someone to say, you're getting really emotional about this, because I might not even notice that I am.
Yeah.
And I have to stop and go, well, yeah, I really am. And I'll have to think about it.
And there's the thing that it's cool to win, for lack of a better term. If I'm having a discussion with you on something, whatever it is, and at the end, I have convinced you of my opinion, in some way, that makes me smarter. Because the opinion I had in the beginning has proven to be the right one for both of us. Smarter. And the opinion you had in the beginning has proven to be wrong.
But you are smarter.
No, but you but switch about, the roles, whatever.
No,
you
but know think what about I mean, this though. For a second. You know, I don't know. The fact of the matter is, we've had a few conversations that went the distance, you know, where we're kind of going back and forth. And
some that got heated emotionally.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, most of those conversations end before they even start, because I'll start going down a road, and then you'll say something, and I'll realize, oh, no, you're right. And I'll just say that.
Well,
I mean, that happens a lot where I go, no, you're right about that. You're right about that. I mean, that happens all the time.
And there have been ones where you make a case, and I think a part of my brain knows that's right, but doesn't admit. So then I keep going. And you'll notice that. And that's a common tactic for people who have discovered they're wrong but don't want to lose, is they suddenly... basically, the argument is always, that's not the point. That's what I'm talking... What you're saying now is not what I'm talking about. Because, no. Obviously, that's right. Of course, we all know that. We're not stupid. But I meant this, you know, that kind of thing.
I guess.
But
yeah, I mean, I...
But that's always a thing. I mean, people... If you... There's this belief in a lot of people, maybe everybody, maybe even you, that's not conscious, but that if I don't have to change my mind a lot, I must be pretty damn smart if I get it right the first time so much. Mm. And if I have to change my mind a lot, clearly I'm dumb because I keep having to adjust. Mm. And I don't. And when you put it in those terms, it sounds stupid. Of course that's not true. But I think there's that knee-jerk reaction.
Well, in our culture, there probably is that.
And it's because also it's the whole right and wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have taken... my belief in whatever it is that could be scientific, could be artistic, could be whatever, and we're putting it in terms of right and wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It becomes a moral thing.
Yeah, a moral thing, that's right.
And that's
right.
Crazy when it's something, you know, when it's a topic about how Thor the Dark World was, you know. It's ridiculous that there's a moral component that, like, I become worse of a person because you have the correct opinion about the Thor movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's how we do it. Hmm. We are way over time, and I have to pee like a racehorse.
Okay, sorry.
So we should wrap it up.
Sorry.
I'm really kind of surprised. We just did the one question, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because that usually only happens if we really lose. I feel like we got a lot of good discussion out of that.
Yeah, I do too.
Out of just one question. So thanks, Azure Talent, for once, jackass. People, write the hat. Seriously, we need stuff. And I say that, and then you all are going to write in with the most inane, you know, black or white, yellow, peanut butter or bananas. No. If that's all you got, we don't just need filler, okay? But just, like, what do you want us to talk about? If you really want us to talk about peanut butter or banana, I mean, go ahead. And now somebody's going to do it because they think it's funny. It's not funny, people. Only do it if you genuinely want us to talk about that. But do write in, because we like doing this, and we need you guys for it. So we will talk to you next week. And in the meantime, go have an argument and lose.
It's fun.
It's good for the soul.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.